the current president. In a letter announcing the tariffs, President Trump calls the trial an international disgrace and says, quote, this trial should not be taking place. It's a witch hunt that should end immediately, unquote. President Lula da Silva responded by rejecting what he called interference or threats by the United States.
For more, we're joined now by Oscar-nominated Brazilian filmmaker Petra Costa, who's made two films about Brazilian politics. She was nominated for an Oscar for the film The Edge of Democracy. Her new documentary that is being released by Netflix next week, but she'll be at the Paris Theater in New York tonight, traces the rise of Christian nationalism and evangelism in Brazil and its power in politics. This is the trailer for Apocalypse in the Tropics. We've added English voices over where needed for our radio listeners.
This city was designed as a vision of Brazil's future. And the cement that held it together was a faith. Not in God, but instead in the equally abstract ideas of progress and democracy.
God, homeland, family, and freedom.
I want to be a pastor of a generation that will change history.
In the last 40 years, evangelicals have grown from 5 to more than 30% of Brazil's population. A rapid religious shift molded into an unprecedented political force.
What really influences my vote is my religion.
We are the absolute majority in this country.
What made socialism fail was denying religion.
With truth, we're building a new politics in Brazil. Bolsonaro likes talking to me because I'm frank with him.
Brazil above everything, God above everyone.
That's democracy.
But democracy isn't just the will of the majority. It's also protection of the minorities.
Democracy is the absolute majority's will.
He's turning the church into a political pulpit.
Here, we'll destroy them.
Freedom of speech isn't freedom to attack. Democracy isn't anarchy.
What will happen to Brazilian democracy?
The Brazilian nation is living a new moment.
The trailer for Apocalypse in the Tropics. For more, we're joined by its director, Petra Costa. She is a Brazilian filmmaker and actress. So this film hits at a pivotal time as President Trump goes after Brazil every which way for hosting the BRICS summit with Lula in the lead to this trial that's taking place. And Bolsonaro is also at the center of this film, as well as the rise of evangelicals in Brazil. A lot of remarkable parallels to the United States, Bolsonaro known as the Trump of the tropics. Can you talk about who Bolsonaro is, this attempted coup, and where this whole religious backing comes from?
Yes. So Bolsonaro was a congressman when I made my film, The Edge of Democracy, which we spoke about here, Amy, a few years ago. He was one of the most far-right congressmen who was defending the military dictatorship, declared his vote against Dilma at the time, defending the torture of Dilma, Rousseff.
Dilma Rousseff, the president.
The first female president of Brazil. Then he decided to run for president and did not have the working class vote in the beginning. He gained that by declaring himself somewhat evangelical, making an alliance with the pastor who's the protagonist of our film, Malafaia, Silas Malafaia, a prominent televangelist. And in this marriage between religion and politics, Bolsonaro was very useful for a growing movement in Brazil that comes from the United States, which it's called Dominion Theology, that has as a plan the takeover of the three branches of government, the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive. We had the chance of filming with Malafaia, this pastor, during the last 5 years. And during that time, what was fascinating to see was his power over the president only grew. And Bolsonaro became a vessel, an instrument to executing this Dominion Theologist plan, which is very similar to what is happening in the United States with Trump and his allies, such as Mac Huckabee, Peter Hegseth,
And Huckabee, very significant. He is now the U.S. ambassador to Israel. And the last actions of Netanyahu in the United States yesterday, the Israeli prime minister, were to meet with evangelical Christians of the United States supporting him in Israel.
And in this film, we also trace the origin of this evangelical, apocalyptic, and sometimes Zionist thought that believes that waging war in the Middle East will accelerate the second coming of Christ, a fascinating theology that is really shaping our geopolitics at this moment and is very understudied for its relevance. The film is an investigation into that, into how this apocalyptic theology is shaping Brazilian politics at this moment, and really making our elections become less a discussion of programs, of plans for the future, but holy wars.
And Petra, you do in the film, I mean, you take also like a historical look. It's not just about what's happened immediately. You document, for example, the visit of the American evangelist Billy Graham, who came to Brazil, I think, for the first time in 1960 and was met by massive audiences. So if you could talk about that, what was the appeal he had then? I mean, we're talking about 70 years ago, right? Over 60 years ago. And how that movement built from then?
Well, Brazil had is one of the greatest Catholic nations in the world. And in the 60s and 70s, a movement called Liberation Theology was growing and had many thoughts about social justice, of empowering the poor and the oppressed in Brazil. But that movement was encountered with much antipathy by the likes of Kissinger and also the lobbying group, the Family, also known as the Fellowship in the United States, which thought as part of the Cold War project, it was interesting to send evangelical missionaries to Brazil against the alleged communist threat. Billy Graham went to Brazil. The dictatorship decided to show his cult, his rally or service in the Maracanã, the biggest stadium in Brazil, in all channels at the time. Evangelicalism grew. Since then, when I was born in the 80s, it was 5% of the population were evangelical. Today, they're 26% of the population. It's one of the fastest growing religious shifts in the history of mankind. And it's not problematic at all. And it's actually delivering social services and spiritual help and psychological help to many of Brazilians. And faith is something that we can't talk about. And there's no reason to interfere or to discuss people's faith only when it decides to have a plan that will basically erode our democracy and one of the greatest achievements of modern society, which is the separation of church and state.
As we wrap up, and we're going to do part two and put it online at democracynow.org, these latest developments, Trump saying drop the trial of Bolsonaro for attempting a coup. Interestingly, here the attempted coup, if as many people describe it, was January 6th. In Brazil, it was January 8th. Or they'll be slapped with, you'll be slapped, your country, with 50% tariffs. In this part one of the discussion, just wrap up with your response to that.
Our film really traces these coup attempts that Bolsonaro waged during the 4 years of his presidency when he said he would never recognize the result of the election if he lost, and the January 8th attacks, which were very much inspired by the January 6th attacks. The relationship between Trump and Bolsonaro is not new. They have been exchanging with Bannon. Bolsonaro's son, Eduardo, left his seat in office in the parliament and came to the United States to lobby for his father, who is currently on trial for the coup attempt that, if was successful, the plan was to assassinate Lula, his vice president, and the Supreme Court justice. So Brazil has to finish this trial. Our courts are independent. And Bolsonaro, as any citizen, has the right to a fair trial, but without foreign interference.
Well, we're going to leave it there now. I also want to talk after this, the show in our web exclusive about your fascinating interview with Lula, having coffee with him, talking about the rise of the evangelicals in Brazil. Petra Costa is the Oscar-nominated Peabody Award-winning Brazilian filmmaker and director of the new film Apocalypse in the Tropics, next week on Netflix. Her previous film, The Edge of Democracy, tonight she'll be at the Paris Theater in New York City. Next up, an update on the new U.S. sanctions against Francesca Albanese, the U.N. Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Palestinian Territory, the occupied Palestinian territory. We'll also speak with her about her new report, From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. Stay with us.
Nobody wants you, nobody cares. Nobody likes you, nobody dares. To extend a greeting, a connecting glance. Life is just a jaded game to them. They will give it a chance. But you know, and I know, that the galaxies are all around us. And life will flow on as long as the grass grows and the water runs. And while I'm here on Earth.
Freedom is free by the Los Angeles band Chicano Batman, performing at our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
The Trump administration has imposed sanctions on United Nations Special Rapporteur for Palestine, Francesca Albanese, over her report naming dozens of companies she says are profiting from Israeli occupation and genocide in Gaza. Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced the sanctions in a social media post Wednesday, stating, quote, Albanese's campaign of political and economic warfare against the United States and Israel will no longer be tolerated, Rubio wrote. Amnesty International blasted the sanctions as a, quote, shameless and transparent attack on the fundamental principles of international justice. Francesca Albanese will join us in a minute. The sanctions were filed after she gave a presentation last week to the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva and called on states to impose an arms embargo and cut off trade and financial ties with Israel, which she alleged was, quote, responsible for one of the cruelest genocides in modern history.
If the genocide has not stopped, it's not just because there has always been an economy of the occupation. It's because the economy of the occupation has turned into an economy of genocide. And so there have been people and organizations that have profited from the violence, the killing, the maiming, the destruction in Gaza and in other parts of the occupied Palestinian territory, because it's not that the Palestinians in the West Bank and East Jerusalem are having the happiest time of their life as we speak. In the past 20 months, while the Israeli army and accompanied by settlers was devastating Palestinian lives and landscapes, the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange soared by 213%, amassing over $220 billion in market gains, including $76.8 billion U.S. dollars in the past month alone. So clearly, for some, genocide is profitable.
For more, we're joined by Francesca Albanese herself, the UN Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territory. Her landmark report is headlined From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. Francesco, we last spoke to you in our New York City studio. You're now in the capital of Slovenia. You've just held a news conference. This news has just come out in the last day that the U.S. is going to sanction you, the U.N. Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territory. Trump has already sanctioned top International Criminal Court officials like the ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan. The ICC has come out with an arrest warrant for both Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and the former Israeli Defense Minister. Can you respond to the sanctions against you and what they mean?
Hi, Amy. Hi, Narmin. Thank you for being for having me with you. Would I respond? It seems that this administration is quite allergic to justice, isn't it? I woke up this morning. I could take my shower. I could talk to my kids. I could meet the wonderful people of Slovenia, institutions and ordinary citizens alike, without the sound of drones. Yes, I skipped breakfast, but I chose it. I was not starving. I'm not starving. And this is the situation of the people of Gaza. This is what we need to talk about, because what the U.S. is doing, people can make their own assessment of it, is distracting us, is trying to distract us from where our focus should be. What's happening to the Palestinian to the Palestinians in what remains, the little that remains of their tormented land, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem.
And could you talk, Francesca, about the fact that this announcement came on while Netanyahu is in Washington, D.C., in fact, his third visit to the United States since Trump came into office in January?
Yeah, in fact, I should correct it. It's not that this administration is allergic to justice. It's attracted to injustice more than justice, because the ICC wanted for war crimes and crimes against humanity, Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't belong to Washington, D.C. He belongs to The Hague or anywhere else where he can be prosecuted as the ICC has requested. Look, I'm more than, I mean, I know the United States is not a member to their own statute, has imposed the sanctions on the ICC. And technically, the argument to impose the sanctions against me is that I cooperate with the ICC. Surely so. Like anyone who wants justice, the ICC is based on the Rome Statute, and I'm a proud Italian, happy that it was my country and the capital of my country to give the name to the statute of the International Criminal Law Court. That is, I mean, this is also the legacy of World War II and the Holocaust. Universal justice starts with that. So look at the paradox. But again, I'm more horrified that my own country, Italy, and Greece, and France, three member states of the Rome Statute, allowed ICC wanted for war crimes and crimes against humanity, Benjamin Netanyahu, to fly with his airplane toward Washington, D.C., over their souls, because this is unacceptable. They should have not given concession such a concession. He must be arrested.
So, Francesca, let's go to your report, the UN report, From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. When we had you on last year in October, you were working on a report. The report had just come out on genocide as colonial erasure. You've also issued another report, Anatomy of a Genocide. So explain why and when you moved your focus to the economic beneficiaries of what's been happening in Gaza.
Yeah, look, I decided to investigate the private sector in February 2023, when I went to Norway, and for the first time I saw what many had already been investigating and denouncing, the BDS movement, Don't Buy Into the Occupation, Profundo, Somo, Who Profits, and the fact that there were people making business in the system, within the system of the military occupation that is Israel was maintaining over the occupied Palestinian territory. Now, it really, as someone has said, it only a lawyer can take ages to realize the economic, the political economic economics of the occupation. But however, times, I mean, 2 years later, I was into the investigation of all the companies that I had started to collect information about 2 years later, because in the middle there was a genocide. I needed to make sense of the military assault that since October 2023, Israel had launched against the Gaza Strip, while also accelerating the annexation and the ethnic cleansing in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. And as I collected together with my team and all the actors that contributed, the lawyers, investigative journalists, and others who contributed to the acquisition of information that I verified, to the setup of a database of 1,000 entities, of which I just collected those eminent cases that help illustrate the system. So, Amy, my report is not to be read as a duplicate of the database that you, that the UN has set up years ago and is updating. It's illustrative of a system, an economy of occupation. Israel would have not been able to maintain the military occupation without the support, the means, the weapons, the machinery, the technology, the legitimacy that has come, including from the pension funds, the, including the Norwegian pension funds, the legitimacy of the universities, and so on and so forth.
I want to go to last month, Norway's largest pension fund, what you're referring to, known as KLP, announced it would no longer invest in two companies that sell equipment to the Israeli military. The pension fund managing the savings of about 900,000 Norwegian municipal workers. Democracy Now! Spoke to Kiran Aziz, head of responsible investments at KLP, about how they came to the decision.
KLP, as Norway's largest pension company, has decided to exclude companies Oshkosh Corporation and Tyson Group due to their sales of weapons to the Israeli military. KLP learned from a report conducted by the UN High Commissioner on Human Rights that several companies were supplying weapons or equipment to the Israeli Defense Force, and these weapons are being used in Gaza. On the basis of this information, KLP has done a thorough assessment of the companies, but also engaged in dialogue with them in order to understand what kind of due diligence they have performed. And like in all other situations, companies have an independent duty to exercise due diligence in order to avoid complicity. But based on our assessment, these companies have failed to demonstrate any due diligence at all. And these companies are also having a long-standing collaboration with the IDF, and weapons delivered have continued after the outbreak of the war in Gaza. Exclusion is an important tool for us to reduce KLP's association with unacceptable conditions that are ongoing or likely to occur in the future. But exclusion is also a way to hold companies accountable, because we all need to respect international law and humanitarian law.
So that was Kiran Aziz, head of responsible investments at KLP. Meanwhile, one of the world's largest shipping companies, Maersk, has recently announced it'll divest from companies linked to illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank following a sustained pressure campaign called Mask Off Maersk that was led by Palestinian youth movement. This is Nadia Tanous, international coordinator of the campaign.
This is a huge win for the movement. Maersk is the Danish logistics giant. They're one of the largest companies on the planet, and they are the first logistics company ever to cease transportation of settlement goods, all settlement products, into the Israeli settlements and out of the Israeli settlements. I think that this is a large step, a first step to isolating the Israeli settlements from the global economy, which decreases their ability to terrorize the Palestinian people, to annex more land, and to continue to break international law. We also were able to ascertain this win not because we demanded divestment from the settlements, but because we lifted the political ceiling and we demanded a people's arms embargo. Maersk is still complicit in the transshipment of arms and weapons components of military cargo to the Israeli Ministry of Defense. They're endemic to the supply chain of the F-35 bomber, which is one of the most expensive and deadliest weapons on the market. And that's why Maersk, this news came the same week as the Francesca Albanese report, which details at length multiple corporations that are complicit in the genocide of the Palestinian people and profiting off of that genocide. Maersk is one of them.
So that's Nadia Tanous of the Palestine Youth Movement. Francesca Albanese, as you listen to both women from Norway and taking on the Danish company Maersk, if you can talk about the other companies that you've been targeting, and if these U.S. sanctions are going to change your approach.
You know, let me share an anecdote, because this is really telling. I've been engaging with a major newspaper who refused to report on my report because it was not accurate. And I mean, it was not accurate, not solid enough, because I had used this as a source. This particular report, the work that this youth movement has done. And you see the condescending attitude of the West and the saviorism that we carry. The youth movement is associated with lack of expertise. Oof, I'm so glad that the world is changing and we are in the hands with this young generation. We are in better hands. What I want to reflect on as listening, as answering your question, Amy, is something that Nadia said, meaning it's the endemic. There are certain services that companies are providing that go to something that is endemic to the illegal occupation, to the apartheid structure that Israel has maintained over the years, over the Palestinians, and now has even turned genocidal. And it's the fact that while people have concentrated their attention without any result on settlements, settlements are clearly at the heart of the problem, but they're entrenched in the Israeli system. The universities have been legitimizing and giving even means, they've been transferring funds and endowments to the Israeli occupation and very ideology of erasure of the Palestinian people. This is why I say there is no neutral sector when it comes to Israel as the state, which has maintained for 57 years an unlawful occupation. And when you look at the water sector, the electricity, for example, there is one grid, there is one way of extracting Palestinian resources and then depriving the Palestinians of them. This is why today I do not call for sanctions on individuals and on companies producing in the settlements. This is the past century. This is the old Bible. This is what we have to do today, is to act like intelligent people and realize that if Israel is accused in different international proceedings of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and even genocide, it's Israel as a state which is to face the consequences, including sanctions and cutting economic ties with Israel as a state.
So, Francesca Albanese, we just have 30 seconds, but if you could talk about, and then we'll continue with you after the program for a taped show, if you could say to what extent you were inspired by the divestment campaign against apartheid South Africa. You spoke about that at the UN.
Certainly I was, of course, but not much. I was more inspired. I mean, not that I was not inspired. It's just that what led me was the need to understand the occupation and the apartheid. And then the campaign made sense to me against apartheid South Africa and against apartheid Israel. Takes time to a lawyer.
Francesca Albanese, we want to thank you for being with us. Please stay with us. We're going to do a post-show, a web exclusive, posted at democracynow.org. UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. We'll link to your report, From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. She was speaking to us from the U.S. First Lady's, Melania Trump's country, Slovenia. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Houston now controlling the flight of Atlantis. The space shuttle spreads its wings one final time for the start of a sentimental journey into history.
Will I ever be to Disneyland?
Affirmative.
That was definitely an e-ticket.
Roger that, Sally.
Set your alarm clocks to Jen LaFranc on Wednesdays from 6 to 8 a.m. for On the Tracks. I'll bring you the best new music in roots Americana,
rock,
R&B, and soul right here on CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.